Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's March 21st, 2014. You're listening to the longest running, the best PokerCast there is. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We've been doing this a long time. You know, we just got an email from one of our listeners saying, hey, you know, you guys went past 300 shows and you didn't even do anything about it. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. We've been doing this a lot longer than 300 shows. And then like, no, but since you've been on your own, I'm like, well, that's a huge milestone for ourselves. I mean, without the need of some huge stinky corporation, you and I did it all by ourselves. 300 shows.
Wow. Every week, too.
Every week. Still never missed an episode or any of that fun stuff. That day, that reckoning is coming, though. I think it's coming. May come next week when Scott's on the cruise.
I'm going to hold tight to it, man. We'll figure this out.
Yeah, we'll see.
We leave no listener behind.
If I don't play ball, there's nothing you can do about it. But no, it's really cool. And you know what? We haven't died down. You know, I think maybe the poker industry is starting to maybe die down a little bit. What do you think?
That's a very big question.
Well, I mean, you know, people are always saying, hey, you know, poker, you know, what's going on with it? Is there new stuff coming out? Is it dying? Is it? And, you know, I think that it's, for those who really enjoyed the game, who learned it during the boom and who knew before that, I think they're still around. It's just the casual ones that, you know, now the online is starting to come back. It's starting to grow some more, and people are starting to forget about Black Friday. I think the game's doing okay. We got a couple of things here to talk about too that might have some say about that. But I think it's doing all right.
Yeah. Well, the first one, I've been wanting to bring this up on the show for a while now. I just haven't had time to. But Nolan Dalla, he's the World Series media director,
right?
And you know, he's never shy about sharing his opinion. And if you want to see what I mean by that, go to his blog. I think it's NolanDalla.com or something like that, but you can Google and find it. Scathing review of a airline that will remain nameless on our show.
Okay.
Which is, I thought he went way beyond what he normally does on it. But for listeners that like people attacking people, go read that. But anyhow, Nolan will be the first to tell you, as he's told us, you know, he doesn't mince words. He puts out his thoughts on whatever it is. And he recently told Poker News that he's wondering now whether poker has become unbeatable. Huh. And he said some of his reasons include the fact that the growth of the game is slowed. Players now have so many more tools these days in which to improve their game with. And the rising cost of traveling to events are cutting into profits. So those three things are all working up to, he's just not sure. I wouldn't say that the game's not beatable. I don't think he said that. I think it's just his point is that it's much harder to beat the game now. And getting to a point where it's just tough.
Yeah, I guess that's, I mean, he's right because, you know, of all the factors now that come into play, travel and people have more education now than ever on how to play games, how to beat games, you know, whatever, what the proper strategy is for things and coaches. And it's just, it's omnipresent. So here's the deal.
This is the deal. This right here is the deal.
What I'm about to say right now is the deal. I don't know if the game is unbeatable because you don't have to travel as much if you don't want to. That's one thing. Two, if you're going to play poker for a living, then you're going to find your sweet spot and what you know you can do because you're a poker player, you're smart, you're obviously smart enough to do this for a living, then you need to know where to live and to maximize all your profit and ROI and all that crap. So it's not your grandfather's poker game anymore. You know what I mean? You're not, you know, in the old days when they didn't even have poker tournaments, guys were making a living. How are they doing it? They were doing it somehow. People were, you know, big whales were coming to town or fish or whatever, and they were doing it. There just weren't that many of them making a living. So I think if you balanced it out and you said, okay, well, there are more people making a living at it now, but there's definitely way more people playing poker now than there were back then. So I agree. I think that it's being more and more difficult to always go out and have a winning session or to make it, you know, as a professional. But I don't think it's unbeatable. And like you said, I don't think he said it that, but it's kind of, that's in the name of the address of it. The address of the story has unbeatable in it. So he's obviously giving that impression. I think it's beatable. I mean, for players who know how to do it.
Yeah, I think probably the better way of saying it is it's just like, you know, every good player knows table selection, how important that is. You know, obviously you can't do it at a tournament, but you can also decide which tournaments are worth your money, right? And when you're at cash games, you can, you know, figure out what table you need to be at, right? I think that's the same thing with all this stuff. You know, yes, the growth of the game has slowed, although we have some signs pointing to it speeding up again. But and players obviously are much more smarter now. You can go online and learn all kinds of stuff now. And then the traveling thing, I think you're right, is hit or miss. But there are people all across this country still playing poker, right? And there are still soft games to be found everywhere.
Yep.
It's just fewer of them, I think, is probably the more correct way of saying this, right? So the ones that still want to look at it and still want to beat it, they just a little bit harder now. They gotta work a little harder to find the games that are beatable.
Yeah, and you know, when you're comparing eras, you know, between before the boom and after the boom, there's just no comparison to the amount of outlets that you have to ply your trade. You know, how many poker rooms there are now? I mean, it's incredible how many poker rooms are out there. How many tours are there? You add up all the tours, including our own, you got probably close to a dozen tours.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, there are a lot of places where you don't even have to go anywhere. You could just stay in your local area that has a few poker rooms in that vicinity and just crush the cash games and the dailies, you know, or the big monthlies or something, and then only travel when you have to. It depends on your level of success, what you think is successful or what you think is beating. You know, beating the game, is it beatable? So
yeah, I'm going to guess that he's writing more towards players not like us or most of our listeners, but towards the professionals or rising professionals that do have to travel to, you know, make a name for themselves and make money. They can't just, you know, sit at the Aria or the bike or wherever and grind out a living.
Yeah.
And to that extent, then, yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, entering... You know, if you and I were to go to Vegas this year and enter a World Series tournament, it's definitely going to be much more difficult for us to win, much more difficult feel, I should say, now than when 5, 6 years, whatever it was, 8. How long ago was it that we actually played in it?
Yeah.
A long time ago. But, you know, just because players are so much better now because of how they are, but that doesn't mean you have to go to the World Series and play in the event if you're a recreational player.
Right.
You just stay at home. But for pros, I think they have to do that kind of stuff. So at that point, yeah, it gets tough to make it work.
It also seems to me like, you know, a lot of these reasons are sort of geared toward no limit hold'em only. I mean, to me, I don't think of, you know, players getting coached on how to play stud eight, or people aren't traveling to go enter a stud eight tournament very often. I mean, they do if there's a big series that's going on, but they'll also travel there for the side action and probably some no limit hold'em. But generally, people aren't, you know, traveling and going crazy to live on the stud eight circuit, you know, or something. Right. So I mean, it seems like it's all no limit hold'em thinking again. And you know what else too? I mean, this is not the first time we've heard this. I mean, I've been hearing this since we started covering when I used to go to the Foxwoods events for the podcast before we even had a magazine. The guys there were like sitting down with me and I'm like, man, this is the life for you, huh? And he's like, the life. I'm like, well, you know, you're getting to see the world. But he goes, you know how much it costs? He said, if I win a $1 million tournament, I might win a couple hundred grand this year. And I'm like, you know, and I have to win a $1 million tournament. And I'm like, wow, you know. So, I mean, yeah, when you think about it, lodging and meals and bills and mortgages and paying back people who put money on you, you know, backers and. It is crazy, and when you think to yourself, you know, a good player catches one or two times out of 10, you know, or two or three times, you know, those catches need to be pretty significant. If you're gonna, you enter 10 tournaments and you only cash twice, if you're getting your money back, you're screwed. You know, so yeah, I mean, there is definitely some merit to this. I do think it's beatable though. I just you got to be savvy. You know,
I think it's interesting listening to you talk right then. More and more that we're talking about it, I'm finding more holes in the overall theory, I think.
Yeah.
Because even for professionals, you don't have to, you know, fly across the world or even go to Vegas and play the World Series. You know, you can pick a region where that style of play works to your game, and there's going to be plenty of tournaments throughout the year just there.
Yeah.
So that cuts down on your travel, and you know. So no, I think it's. I think really probably the premise is playing a game the way you want to play it has become less beatable.
Yeah.
But right. There are still ways. You just have to be different in how you proceed and everything.
Yeah. Right. Look at it this way: you're not going to try to become a professional poker player living and staying in Alabama. It's just not going to work for you unless you're. Way, way, way south Alabama, and you could play the poker rooms in the panhandle. You know what I mean? But if you're somewhere like in, or even like Atlanta, Georgia or something, you're screwed. You know, unless you could play online, which you can't, you know, you're going to have to travel. You're going to have to, or there's going to be some sort of home game circuit that we all don't know about that, you know, you're going to be so successful in. And even that, that's probably not what he's talking about. He's talking about tournament poker, I think, with cash games on the side. So, yeah, I think you're right. If you're going to make the effort to be a pro, you're clearly going to have to go live somewhere where a lot of different things are. You know, in other words, you'd want to live, say, in Atlantic City, so you could play the Strip, you could play Delaware, you could play Philadelphia, all within reasonable driving distance. You know, instead of airfare and always meals and all that, because you could literally just go back home the next day if you lived somewhere halfway between all these locations, or Vegas, where there's 50 something poker rooms in a 12-mile radius. Or California, where there's 647,000 rooms up and down the state, and then Nevada's there too, Reno right across the border. So it just, if you're going to be a pro and you're picking your spots properly, I think it's definitely beatable. You know, if you're a pro, if you're us, you can't beat, if the game comes to you, you're terrible. But I mean, if you're a good player, I think it's beatable still.
Well, one thing that's trying to get the growth of the game kickstarted, our good friend Kerry at Blue Shark Optics called me up last month and said, he was like, you know, hey, everybody's got a day. There's Secretary's Day, there's Arbor Day, there's, you know, whatever.
Flag Day.
Like, yeah, wow. He's like, but there's no Poker Day. And he's like, I'm changing that. I'm declaring April 19th National Poker Day. Or actually Poker Day USA, he's calling it.
Poker Day USA. Okay.
And he created a website, conveniently PokerDayUSA.com. And so he's just trying to get it out there and trying to get people excited about the game again. I don't think there's any clear path on where this is going to go. He kind of wants to see where it takes him. But for what we know right now is they have some Poker Day USA merchandise, and he's had a pretty cool logo. I think it's pretty neat. And you can go to the website, and if you want to buy some clothing, then 50% of the profit will be donated to charities. So there's a charitable component to it, which is kind of cool. And then he's just trying to get the word out from it and trying to get some casinos to sign up and maybe do something on April 19th. You know, whether give everybody a free cup of soup or, you know, reduce tournament buy-in or something. And I noticed he just signed the two Hollywood casinos in Ohio and Rivers Casino in Pittsburgh on board. I don't know exactly what they're going to be doing for this, but, you know, we'll see what happens. But he kind of wanted to galvanize the poker community around something.
I love Kerry.
He's always thinking, isn't he?
He's a great guy, and he is, and he always does a lot for poker. It's not like he's got an ulterior motive for his business here or anything. He just loves the game. He loves the people. And he loves the fact that poker is, you know, it's a big thing in America, and it needs to be recognized. And maybe the more positive things that happen, the more positive things will happen. And the thing I love most is that he did it on a Saturday. He's thinking, you don't have it on a Monday afternoon. You know what I mean? He did it on a Saturday. He's the man. He knows that we can all go out, basically, most of America can go out on a Saturday, play poker, arrange a home game for that day or something. You know, that's cool. And I think this is an interesting thing. And I hope that, I hope it helps to wash away some of the negative stuff that we've been hearing lately. You know, and he's a good guy. He's good for poker, and I'm glad he's doing this. It's very good.
Absolutely. So just go to PokerDayUSA.com for more information or to be part of it.
That's pretty cool. All right, well, each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emails us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool.
And I will pause right now to let you know.
That number's new.
Our hotline number is new.
I forgot we changed it.
Have it stored in your cell phone. The new number, 206-338-6344. So update that and make it ring.
That freaked me out. I totally forgot we changed that number. I do it from memory most of the time. Good thing I saw that. All right, so this comes from longtime listener David Bloomberg. He says, my friend raised in a 1-3 cash game and got a few callers. Flop came out queen high, and my friend made a significant bet that got everybody out except for one guy, an obvious regular at the casino who would probably have rather been playing 2-5 if there had been a game going. The turn was a deuce, which paired the board with another deuce, well, clearly, and my friend bet around 140. Wow. The opponent tanked for a while, then called. The king on the river brought a snap shove for 200 by my friend. The opponent tanked again and then called. My friend had pocket tens. The opponent had ace-king, meaning he had nothing until the river, and then he got there. My friend couldn't believe it. How could the guy call the turn bet with just ace-high? The opponent got cocky and said he knew my friend had pocket tens or jacks because otherwise there was no reason to bet there. When my friend went to get more money at the ATM, several of us kind of wondered how he could call if he did indeed know that his friend had tens or jacks. The opponent kept re-emphasizing that he knew what my friend had and then just got pissy and said it would take too long to explain it to us, acting like he was an obviously superior player and we were just a bunch of stupid fish. So we never got an answer beyond him claiming that he knew what my friend had. Except that if he did indeed know what my friend had, that means he had only six outs. Since my friend only had $200 behind for the river, there is no way that there were implied odds for the opponent to hit one of his six outs. The only thing that has come to mind is that he was floating two streets in hopes of shoving the river himself to take the pot away from my friend if my friend checked. But since my friend bet every street and there was no apparent history between them other than the opponent having seen the pocket fours hand immediately prior, there was no particular reason for the villain to believe that was likely. Do you have any thoughts on the matter? Was there a strategy here that none of the rest of us understood? Or was the villain just lucky and didn't want to admit it? Well, you know, I could tell you, but it would take too long to explain it.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, Dave, all your friends, you're just a bunch of stupid, stupid fish.
How could you not understand?
It's just so obvious.
Plain as day.
Oh, man. No, I would bet my bottom dollar, just $1, because, you know, I had a heavy tax bill this year. But my bottom dollar, my very last, the real cruddy bottom dollar, that this guy is just making this up. Right? I don't know how the showdown worked. If the guy, you know, if he showed his tens and then shows, if that worked that way, then he could say, oh, I knew you had. He probably insert whatever hand you're going to show, right? And then the whole, wow, it's just going to take too long to explain it to you is just, you know, again, one of those ways that makes you, the desire is to befuddle you. And clearly, if that was his case, he succeeded, right?
Right.
He befuddled Dave, he befuddled all his friends, and now he's befuddling the entire Antiup Nation because he made it on the show.
It is an interesting
call. To some degree,
I
think that could be successful.
Yeah, that is a very interesting call on the turn. You can float a flop, But then the guy bets 140, and it's only a 1-3 game. Even if he bet, even if he raised to 15 on the preflop and got a call for 30 in the pot, and then bet 30, you know, I mean, you're looking at 60 and 30, 90. He's only 90-ish in the pot at that point. That's a huge two bets there. So to go 140 on the turn, that's a huge bet. There's no way you're caught 140 with nothing unless you're just an idiot. Or, I mean, maybe the guy really did think that he could float him one more street because they say it, you know, only, you know, heroes and Stu Unger can fire three barrels. So maybe that's what he was. Maybe he really would. Maybe money means nothing to this guy and he really thought you were going to float or you were going to check the river and he's going to shove on you. I mean, it's just so unlikely to call 140 with nothing but two overs and six outs. Crazy.
Now, I will say this, that if he did think that you had tens or jacks, it's not so much the outs that I think are important. I mean, obviously...
No, I don't either.
He was hoping to hit the ace or the king would be nice for him, right? But if he knew that you had that and the queen was on board, he has leverage to try to push you off that hand by representing the queen or making you be completely confused to why he didn't bet, but bet enough that you're not willing to put it in with your tens or jacks.
Here's the deal. He needs, if he's thinking that way, obviously the outs, like you said, mean nothing to him. He's playing the player in a situation. So he needs to shove that turn and make you fold. To just call and then hope, that point now he's hoping to hit his ace and king or that you're going to check.
Well, but he could shove the river, right? You know, I think he could still...
Well, he can't shove the river unless we check. We bet first. So
right,
if we bet, he can't shove the river. It means nothing. He has to call our bet. Shoving does nothing.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, you're right.
So
yeah.
He has to shove the turn.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
It's terrible. Sorry, yeah. David. Your friend got screwed here. It's terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Wow. Interesting. See, now we just talked forever about it, too.
It's good. No, it's good.
Maybe that guy's listening sometime. I'm like, yes!
Yeah, I'm a genius.
The whole country has no idea how I'm playing now.
I can befuddle anyone.
All right, it's time for Call the Floor. If you find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and not sure what the proper ruling should have been, email us at podcast@anteupmagazine.com. That hasn't changed.
Nope.
And we'll have Anteup Poker Tour Tournament Director Sam Minatello tell you how he would have ruled. This week's Call the Floor comes from Dave Miller. He says, we're in a 1-2 no-limit hold'em game in a pub poker league. Two scenarios involving oversized chips that were not verbalized occurred. In the first, it is raised to $6. A player who has not put in any chips yet puts in two $5 chips without saying anything. Call or raise? In the second, it's limped to the small blind who puts in a $5 chip without saying anything and leaves his $1 small blind in the pot. Call or raise?
All right, here's what Sam had to say. Both of these scenarios would be just a call. For the $6 bet scenario, we cannot assume what the player's intent is when they call a $6 bet with two $5 chips. $10 would be a legal raise here, but they never announced a raise, so we always consider this just a call. I would remind the players to verbalize the action because that always takes priority and eliminates any doubt to what a player's intent is. The $5 chip being tossed in from the small blind is also just a call. It's a single oversized chip being tossed into the pot. Regardless of the dollar already being in the pot, we cannot assume what the player's intent is. If the player would have grabbed the $1 chip and threw both chips into the pot together, then it would be multiple chips and therefore be considered a raise because they are putting them in together, showing a $6 bet. Players, just remember, all confusion can be avoided by simply stating your action before you make it. And that's like Scott's mantra whenever we teach poker.
You know, wow, I've never heard that before, but that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
If you just state your action.
Say what you need to do. Scott, like, he has that, like, on his business card when he hands it out to people. State your action. But it's so true. And I have to admit, I am a little confused when somebody does that, when they have a dollar out there and they throw a five. If no raise has been to him, it looks like he's raising because he's made it six instead of pulling the one back and throwing the five out to cover the $2. You know what I mean? So it looks like a raise to me, and I would probably be confused by that if I was playing. I'm glad Sam straightened that out, because to me, I still wouldn't have known the right ruling without him saying that.
Yeah, I think that's the best explanation
yeah.
of that situation, which I think is confusing to everybody. Because when you read, that's one of those things where if you read the poker TDA rules, of course, this is a cash game, so it doesn't really apply, but at least you get inspiration from it. If you read the TDA rules, the single oversized chip, when you read it, it's tough to understand because this is one of those scenarios where some people would say, hey, my chip is already in there. So that's a second chip.
Yeah.
And then other people like be no, it's an oversight. It's a single chip. So the fact that he's saying, I like the fact that he explained, if you take the chip out and throw it in together, it's completely different than the one chip going in. Even though the end result is both $6 being put in the pot.
Yeah, because you have a chip out there, but the single chip is being thrown out. That's the action that he's referring to. The single oversized chip is now being tossed out there. So unless you say raise or pull that other one back. And then say raise or put them out there together, then you've actually made a single oversized bet there, and they have to just consider it a call, which is fine too because you can't read somebody's mind, so you just have to default to the least offensive thing.
Yeah, and that's exactly he said that three times in this answer. Yeah. Player's intent. That's really what all these rules are about. Yep. Is not trying to guess what somebody's intent is. You know, the player does not give you a clear. Guideline on what his intent is, then you just have to go to lowest common denominator on it. And yeah. We're not mind readers. All right, the dealers are mind readers. So, but you know what's really interesting?
Mm.
If people just verbalize their actions,
if you just said what you want, we will all be happy.
Oh man, I still don't get why people don't do it. I just don't. It's so easy just to say raise
call
$200. It's so easy.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just because people are shy. I mean, again, I'm kind of quiet at the table, but even I verbalize my action in, you know, all meaningful actions. You know, I'm not going to say call every single time I'm just calling or check. But maybe it's because people are shy. I don't know. Or I can't imagine that people are just so scared that their voice is going to be a tell. If they don't want to like talk. I mean, I don't get it. So maybe I'm just curious from our nation why people are scared to verbalize.
I'm going to kickstart it here for you.
All right.
You know, like the Kickstarter campaign. I'm going to kickstart why I think they do this. I think it's because just like when they say Annie, please, Annie, and people have to be reminded to do that. I think that they're just not all there with. And when I mean all there, I don't mean they're stupid. I mean they're not completely focused on the task at hand.
Really?
Just like when we're playing regular tournament poker and you go to a charity event and they have, you know, antes, and 10 hours in, they're still forgetting their ante. I think it's the same thing. I think they must have heard that rule. You can't be in a poker room for hours on hours on hours on end, especially in a tournament. This is a cash, but still, especially in a tournament, and not know the single chip rule by then. And then, even if you did, if it happens twice in the same night, then people need to know. I think eventually it's because they're just not cognizant of what they need to be doing. There's not a lot of people who are aware of, you know, they enjoy the risk of it, they enjoy the chance of winning money, but they're not really a detailed people. They're not out there trying to follow every rule and or paying attention. They're there to play hands and make hands. And so sometimes it just escapes them that there is a situation here that has protocol, and you need to follow it because they're just mindless. They're there to have fun, they're there to make money, or they're not taking it seriously like we do, you know, and that's what I think it is. I think that they're just like they don't pay attention for the antes, they don't pay attention to these other sort of obscure rules that don't always, they're not always coming up, you know.
Hmm.
I feel like that's what it is. I feel like it's just another version of them not putting in their ante, you know, because they always have to be reminded of it because they're just not paying attention. That's what I think it is. You tell me if I'm wrong, Andy Up Nation. I want to know.
Please, please, always take an opportunity to tell Chris he's wrong.
Nice.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. We're still in that 10-20 game, and we're sitting with our original buy-in of 2,000 after losing a heartbreaker to a turn straight. On this hand, the under-the-gun limps, plus one calls, MP1 min raises to 40. Yep, these even happen at this level. And we're in the hijack with the 8 of diamonds, 7 of diamonds. This is a perfect hand to call a min raise with, so we do. the cutoff calls, the button folds, small blind folds, big blind calls, under the gun and the plus one call, and we're going to a flop with 240 in the pot. The flop is the 10 of hearts, 9 of spades, 5 of diamonds. And interestingly enough, it's checked to us. We're going to make a stab at it. If it gets called, we can shut it down unless a 6 or a jack comes on the turn. We make it 150 to go. The cutoff calls, but everybody else folds. This is the same player from our heartbreaker. Now he's got position on us, and he's got us covered. The turn is the jack of diamonds. With 540 in the pot, we've hit one of our gin cards, and it gives us a flush draw, though we don't care too much about that. We lead out for 300. Our opponent raises us to 900. So, we've invested 490 into this pot. What's the move here?
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. This comes from our good friend Nick in California, and he's in a tournament. And I assume it's no limit hold'em, so you can rest on your Omaha.
Yeah, there's no stud 8 circuit that I need to worry about here.
he said this hand was special for a couple reasons. He says the villain... was no villain at all, but actually a famous poker TV commentator.
Holy cow, I'm on.
Keep the name anonymous because, you know, we're obviously going to be analyzing hand here. And
how weird is it that I'm on a show talking about myself? This is so bizarre,
no,
wait, Nick.
It can't be you, because the next line was, this was a decent-sized tournament with a $365 buy-in.
Hey, I've played in one of those. And I cashed. So, it could be me.
Oh, man. All right, so $365 buy-in, 284 total players, and I'm going to set the Vegas line on whether I accidentally give this guy's name up at some point during this hand. I know it's going to happen.
Okay.
All right, so he says, during this tournament, I ended up playing with this player for more than 12 hours at the same table.
Holy cow.
That's a lot of history right there, right?
Yeah.
All right, so we're currently at a 25 ante, 150, 300 for the blinds. The average stack is squiggly 20,000, and tournament started, starting stack was 15,000.
All right.
Lost a couple people to get the average up to squiggly 20,000.
All right.
We are in middle position for this hand with squiggly 26,000, and our favorite TV commentator, not villain, villain, is in the small blind with squiggly 22,000. So we have he or she covered by 4,000.
Okay.
Folds to us in middle position. And we have queen jack. He doesn't give a suit, so I'm going to assume suits don't matter.
All right, well, you know, I think you agree that generally if we're going to play this hand, we like to come in for a raise to disguise what we have. And I don't like to limp with hands like this. I mean, I don't like to limp that often at all in tournaments unless I'm getting a really good price for something. But if I'm first to enter the pot, I want to raise. You know, if we're doing standard stuff, because I don't know anything about these people other than it's a celebrity that he's played with for 12 hours, I have to always default to 3X, and then there's some antes in there too, so maybe a little more, so maybe 1,000.
I like the Jonathan Little strategy of a little bit more than min raise. So okay. I'm going to go somewhere between 700 and 800.
Now, does that include when there's antes involved?
You could throw an extra thing in for the ante. I don't think you ever described that, but I mean, I guess it can't hurt, right? Because the pot's a little bit bigger, so. All right, so I'll skew higher. I'll skew to the high end, 800.
800. All right. Well, I was thinking about 950 to 1,000, so I'll go with 950 just so you and I are closer to the same amount.
And you are wasting 150 units.
You will see about that. We will see, young man.
All right, well, our hero goes to 750. So he goes away and blow both of us. But it's probably what I would have bet without the antes, but you talked me into the antes.
Yeah, because there's 250 more in the pot already. So there's 250 for that, and there's the 450. You're looking at what 700 is already in the pot. And so if somebody's got in the big blind for 300, it's only going to cost them 450 to win 750 and you're 750. So that's 1,500. They're getting almost 4-1 on their money for a call. I at least want them to put some money out there.
All right.
But whatever.
Okay. Well, we'll see how it works.
Okay.
Cutoff calls, and then it goes to our villain, not villain, in the small blind who calls as well. So three players to the flop. 2,800 in the pot. And that flop is Jack, Jack, Six, Rainbow. And remember, we had Queen, Jack. And the small blind checks, and it is on us.
Nice. All right, so we have three of the four jacks in the deck. So this is a very good thing. It's called three of a kind or trips. I don't know. Two-thirds of the pot or so, maybe. Maybe. Yeah, about that, I guess. What do you think? About two-thirds?
Probably 2,000 round up.
Yeah, around 2,000.
Or less if you get some spare change that you're trying to get rid of.
Yeah, and you don't want to waste 100 like Scott said earlier. So you want to be as precise as possible. So it can be 1,800 if you want. You know, or 1,850 or whatever. So, but yeah, I would say about 1,900 to 2,000.
And I might edge it up a little bit more to make it look like I'm trying to protect my hand, which I clearly am not at this point.
Yeah, I mean,
and the 2,000 might give that. There's a nice clean round number that makes it look like, hey, he's got ace king and he's just
yeah continuation bet exactly. So yeah, 19 and 2,000. That sounds pretty good.
All right. Our hero says contemplate a bet here, but I don't want to scare off hands that could easily bet here. Any overpair and any weaker jack or even a six could all bet here. So I check behind and disguise the strength. I don't like this.
No.
And the reason I don't like this is that we're supposed to see bet here, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that we see bet makes it look like it's just a continuation bet. And it gives somebody an opportunity to raise us and try to bluff us off the hand. And guess what? We nail this flop.
Yeah.
So that's why I like the bet here. I don't like to disguise the strength at all. Because it's too hard, I think, with the two jacks out to disguise. Because then what are you going to do? I mean, I guess then you come alive on the turn because it looks like you sent out the... All right, well, close is clear now. Now I'm going to bet, and then maybe somebody will raise you at that point. But I'd rather just take the chance right now and get it out there and have somebody play back on me right now. Or even better yet, call with the intention of trying to float me.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is if I remember correctly, I think it was Annie Duke in her book. She was saying that if you don't bet there, it even looks fishy. Here you are raising in middle position.
Oh, exactly, yeah.
You know, and it's not like you're raising on the button when you only have the blinds behind you. So, I mean, you're supposed to have something here in middle position to warrant that raise. And by raising and then not protecting your hand, and you're trying to thin the field even more. You don't want two people coming along for a free card on the turn. You know what I mean? How do you know they don't have 8-8 and then they turn an 8 on you when you would have gotten them out had you bet? Or, you know, who knows? So there are a lot of reasons to bet, and there are very few to check here. The only way I would check is if I knew the guy in the cutoff would raise. If I knew that guy had been doing it all day to me, I've been playing for 12 hours or whatever. If I knew this guy was going to be like, ha-ha, I got you again. Here I come with my 2,000, you know, bet, then I could check raise him. But other than that, I really see very...
But even if you do that, don't you lose value in the hand? Because at that point now, you're saying, hey, I do have a jack.
Yeah, it's possible.
And you're saying, hey, ha-ha, I knew you were going to bet, now I raised, hey, I got a jack.
So yeah,
then,
yeah. So
I
then,
would rather bet now and let somebody raise on top of that.
Yeah, because if you just call his bet, then it's going to look even weird to check again, because what are you calling with? You know, you may work out with a call, because you could say you have tens. And that board is pretty good for you.
But yeah, but even a call.
Even a call.
Call, then you check the turn, right? And then at that point, if he was bluffing at it, he's going to check behind.
Yeah.
Pot, right? So you lose the value there. So
unless it's a scare card on the turn, then you're going to lose value that way. So just bet out.
Yeah. Best bet.
Don't outthink yourself.
All right. So he says the cutoff checks, and we get a free turn card. And he has those little frowny faces.
Yeah.
Yep.
You got too cute for your own good.
I'm frowny too. he said, I was hoping the cutoff might take control and bet the flop after everyone else checked. And that's the problem. You can't let other people bet your hand for you.
No, and you were the one that took control pre-flop, so why would he now want to be crazy betting into you? You could have anything. You'd have ace-ace, ace-jack. He could be slow playing. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to not bet for him.
And I think that board, too, it's tough for anybody to really bet on that board, right? Because if you're the cutoff there, I mean, one, the conventional thinking is, well, everybody's scared. No one has jacks, no one's a bet, so if I bet here, I'll take it down, which works in some places. But I think more likely, I think you just say, hey, you get into that, you play mind games yourself. Hey, it's a small blind, got a jack. There's a guy that bet jack, and now he's checking, hoping I'm going to bet for him. Well, screw that. I'm just going to check, too. I'm not going to get involved with this.
Yeah.
And I think that's how most people are playing now. I think, you know, maybe at the smaller, less sophisticated games. you might get somebody that might take a stab there and try to take it down. But I don't think you can guarantee that that guy's going to bet there. I think it's a scary board for everyone. So,
no, you know what though, I can feel the bile rising up into my throat here. you just know that this is going to come back to bite Nick on the hiney here. This is not good. Something's going to happen now. That's going to. Oh man, I could just feel it. All right, let's go.
All right, turn is a deuce. So our board now is Jack, six, deuce. And our hero says, probably the best card for me. And the small blind checks, and it's on us now.
All right, well, let's go back to the bet we were going to make. See what happens. 1900 or so, 2000. See what happens.
Our hero says, this time I'm not missing a bet here. All right, Nick. I decided to bet 1200, almost half the pot. Probably need a little bit more, right?
I would take more because that's not even, you know, that's not even half. That's like, because now somebody who doesn't believe you, who thinks you might have ace king, and they might think they're six, well, not 6-6 because they have a flush, which could be what they have too, by the way. But you know, something like 5-5 might be good, or 7-7 might be good. You know, if you're not betting that much to try to either win a pot, I think is pretty good for them right now. Because I tell you what, if you had 7-7. That's a pretty good flop for you.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and the turn's a good turn for you.
Still be in here. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then also you're taking a chance on, you know, you might snap off a two-outer on the river and really get some money. So I don't like that size bet at all. I mean, at this point, it's got to be a little more than that. It'd be one thing if the pot was bigger and you're betting a third or whatever, but...
To me, it's almost one of those bets that's like, I've got jacks. I just want to keep you guys in. 1,200.
Don't notice me over here in the middle position.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I would interpret it. So it almost, that's a bet to scare people out if they have nothing. Where, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, I know we're worried about somebody rivering us with something. But the only worry there is just not getting enough money in the pot while we're ahead.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I think the 2000 again. It goes. It's the same thing to me on the flop, and now it's making it look like, you know. All right, so I raise pre-flop, scary board, but everybody check behind. So now I'm coming out strong, and I think somebody would still read that just like they would have on the flop, as you're trying to steal the pot, and you're going to get a better chance of somebody raising you by betting more. As odd as that sounds.
Yeah, I can see this hand becoming a nightmare on the river now, just because. If somebody just calls this, there are a couple of scenarios that you have to put them on. That they have a hand that is like a middle pair that they think that it's good, or they've been slow playing a boat with six, you know, or a bigger jack or something. It's hard to imagine somebody not raising with ace jack, so maybe king jack is out there. I don't know. But it's hard to imagine them checking it again if it's our villain, which we said the villain's in a small blind, not the cutoff. So. It's hard to imagine someone, some major TV personality checking again there, but, you know, because he's going to miss another bet with three jacks. So, I don't know. If it's a boat, he's hoping somebody catches up, and when they didn't catch up on the turn, he checked again, and then we just happen to bet out, he may call. So I'm a little worried.
Well, it wouldn't be hand of the week if we weren't worried.
That's right. But I am still betting. There's no way I'm not betting three jacks with a queen kicker.
All right, so we bet 1,200. The cutoff calls, and now it's on to the small blind, who raises to 4,000.
Yeah.
And he says it's a good move and puts me on a tough decision.
Here's the deal. If he's got a full house, there's no reason to raise with two players in. The only way you're going to lose is if someone gets some sort of incredible two-outer that gives him a better full house. Or if they have a jack with a higher kicker than whatever you have, which is possible. I mean, the guy in the blind could have jack 10 or jack 9 or,
right.
You know, something that's worth defending with, jack 10 probably. So that's the worry there, is that you got to worry that he's going to fill up bigger than you if you're the small blind. So I don't know if I would raise if I had the boat already. So it's interesting. It might just be a random three jacks that we're up against, and we might be up against something like king jack or... Jack 10, so I don't think I can fold, though. Especially since I should have bet the flop and the turn and bet more than 4,000 anyway. So I probably would just call that.
Well, I think this is exactly what we wanted to happen on the flop, right?
Yeah.
Bet and have somebody check raises because they don't believe us. Now, I would rather it be the cutoff because I think it's more plausible that he's bluffing than the small blind. You never know what they have. But I think we got what we wanted. It's just a matter of if whether we want to re-raise and go crazy at this point, not knowing because the information is so weird at this point. I think I'm inclined to call, let the guy bet again on the river and be happy with winning this pot with those two amounts.
Yeah, because if
it's going to be significant.
If we have 26,000 and we just call, we'll still have 22,000 left. There's no way they're shoving here. So even if he bet 10 grand on the river, which he's not going, I don't think he's going to, but if he did, you know, because this guy's been playing poker for a long time. He's not going to just randomly shove on the river for no reason. He's going to try to get as much money as he can. You know, we'd still have 16 grand left with 300 big blinds. So, you know, our M is plenty big enough to continue. And it sounds like if he's been playing for hours and the blinds are only at 153 with a 25 ante, it sounds like the slow structure. So there's no reason for us to panic, even if we're wrong on this hand. So I'm just calling and seeing what kind of bet he wants to make on the river. And if we happen to get a queen on the end, then we can put in a value raise.
That's true. Yep.
That's what it feels like to me, at least.
All right. Our hero says, I expected the 1,200 turn bet to thin the crowd, and now I have one caller and check re-raise out of position, which he says is usually a show of strength. He says, could he have slow-played ace-jack or even king-jack? Am I drawing nearly dead here? I think for a few minutes and decided to just call. I don't think folding my hand was an option. You could think I was just making a stab at the pot after everyone checked the flop. You could easily have ace-queen or other overcard combinations. Absolutely, I don't think you can fold here.
Yeah, no way you can fold. Of course, I don't know why you would think 1,200 within the field. It's not a big bet if they have anything. Yeah. You know what I mean? If they have anything,
I guess maybe you're just thinking it's a scary board now. Yeah. You know, I checked right now. I'm going to be the one that bets. And, you know. But, I mean, the whole thing that we talked about before, which I don't think really holds water these days. Used to.
Yeah. So what does the cutoff do after we call?
All right, the cutoff folds.
Okay.
So we're heads up going to the river with a pot of 12,000, and the river is a queen. Bingo! Hit the best possible card for us. Well, actually, the jack would have been.
The jack would have been the best possible.
It's nearly the absolute nuts. Nearly! I know that now! Only pocket queens can beat us, but that isn't even a consideration, he says. The villain's first to act and checks now after a raising.
Oh, wow.
He says, now the only question is how strong is his hand and what bet will he call on the river?
I think about 3.5-4 grand is a perfect bet here. Because it looks like that this guy was trying to either make a move or that he somehow got scared by your call. And is now, you know, fearing that you have the same jack like him, and you might have a better jack because you raised preflop. So you got to make something that he has to call that's not so incredibly imposing that he folds, but at the same time, it's like, you know, you got to make some money on this. And you're trying to also disguise his bet as maybe it's something that looks like it's you're trying to steal it back. So I think something like 4 grand, a third of that pot, is not that bad of a bet. It's the same bet that he made, so...
This is a difficult spot because, I mean, who raises there and then checks the river?
Yeah.
I mean, it almost seems like he was exactly doing what we thought, trying to steal the pot, and then, he calls. He must have something. And now he's just going to get out. So I don't know what bet here we're going to get a call with. So I think you can go two different ways. You can try to bet something kind of smallish that it'll call just out of curiosity, or bet something really big that makes it look like you're trying to bluff. And maybe give that guy another shot at snapping you off.
Yeah, I know what you're saying there, too.
I think that's a higher risk play to do that.
That's difficult.
But, I mean, I might do it just because I don't think he's going to call anything. So if he's not going to call anything, I think it's worth the risk to bet pot 12,000 and try to get him to goad him into that versus betting 3,000, which we think he'll call, because that 12,000 is going to be a lot bigger for a pot than for our stack in the 3,000.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is when you're doing hand of the week like this, you just don't know what the player looks like. You don't know, is he confident and he's just check calling because he wants to control the size of the pot, but you know he's going to call no matter what? Is he the kind of guy you've played with for 12 hours? Is he the kind of guy that will call a huge bet on the river thinking you're going to, you know what I mean? So we don't know any of this stuff. So going in, again, it's got to be pretty ABC, I think, just because we don't know enough from playing. We haven't played with this guy for 12 hours. We haven't seen him make big snap-off river calls because he doesn't believe that you really have it or something. So I'm going to try to get some money out of this guy and bet 35 to 4,000.
Okay. I would probably bet big just for the fun of it. But All right, so let's see. Our hero says, I can't give him credit for a super strong hand because he didn't bet out on the river. If he had something like ace-jack, I think he would have bet for value when the queen hit the river. I quickly glanced down at his remaining stack, looking to see how many 5,000 chips he had left. I wanted to make a bet he could call without thinking too hard. So he's playing your line.
Okay.
I wanted the bet to be too tempting to fold. I decided a bet of about half the pot would be a good river bet. It isn't too much to call. It could possibly be seen as a river-sized bluff bet. So he's kind of going right down the middle of our two bets, right?
Yeah,
because it makes sense.
I didn't think that he would bet that much just because of his history of betting. He underbet. For me, it felt like an underbet on the raise and on the turn bet. So I felt like he might bet less. But if you want to bet half the pot, that's pretty cool, too. I just want to make sure this guy calls if he has three jacks, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, 6,000 might be okay, 5,000. But I still probably would have went more toward the 4,000 just because it's a third of the pot, and it seems like it's almost an automatic. But, well, all right, so what happened?
All right, says, before tossing the bet, I decided to make it a fun and quirky bet. So I clearly announced out loud, 5,675. I love it. It would even be better if you pushed out 5,675.
Yeah.
My trick. But I like that you're verbalizing your action, Nick. That's going to help you very long.
We ever heard that before?
He says, I wasn't even able to collect the chips in my hand before I heard the villain announce a quick call with a small chuckle as he was clearly amused at my odd verbal bet sizing announcement. I show the queen jack for the boat, and he shows a 10 jack.
Yeah, jack 10.
For trip jacks, as he said something about how he should never have called pre-flop with jack 10.
Yeah. So we're going to know who this person is or no?
No, I'm not going to say it.
Aww.
We don't have to know who this. Well, I'm not going to embarrass the guy.
He played it fine. He's not embarrassing. He just lost a hand of poker. That's the game, man. Well, anyway, Jack 10 made a lot of sense there. And the queen coming on the end, he's just check calling because he wants to, you know, he doesn't want to be bet out of the pot. That makes sense, you know. And, yeah.
Now I wonder, and there's no way we could have put him on Jack 10 there. I mean, obviously, he was in his range, right? But now I wonder, had we done what I said in 12,000, whether he would have called 12,000.
You said we couldn't put him on Jack 10? I put him on Jack 10 like the...
Well, we can't put him specifically on Jack 10.
Oh, no, I mean,
he's in his range, obviously.
Yeah. We're just hoping it's not King Jack, because we knew it was a Jack. We just didn't know if it was a King Jack or a Jack 9 or Jack 10. Would he have bet... I don't think he would have called 12 grand. Maybe he
would you have called?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. It's still only... I still
I'm
would
playing
have
it back the way I would have played it, which what I'm saying is that a bet of 12,000 there looks like I'm trying to steal this pot, and I'm making it so big that you're not going to call. And that would probably encourage me to make that call. And then I would be really upset.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, no one's going to call that bet without a jack, I don't think, unless they have, like, you know, an overpair, which doesn't make sense with how the hand played out. So
I think
the fact that he had a jack, I almost think that he would have called the 12,000. So we lost 6,000 in value there, I think.
Well, the other thing, too, is if we bet out on the flop, he would have called. And you might have raised, and you might have gone. Too. You guys going to have gotten it all in, too. Who knows? So, I mean, that's the other thing. He might have thought you had aces, and you were shoving on him, and he calls with his, I got a jack. And he's, oh, no, I got a jack, too. And then you shove on it, and it, you know what I mean? So you might have gotten all his chips if you'd bet out. That's the thing. You might have gotten all of his chips, because then on the turn, he bets out again, you raise him again, and then you guys get it all in. So you might have gotten all his chips had you bet out instead of gotten cute.
True.
So there are different ways to play this. But Jack 10 made a lot of sense at the end there, and I'm just glad you got to be the very popular poker host for a nice big pot, and now you're on Hand of the Week. See, now you're a celebrity yourself, so people are going to be gunning for you now. Tune in next week to see if Nick is in the Hand of the Week instead of sending it in. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table. Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335.
Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.